there are many points where you can choose to give up, and those points will come at you in your face many, many times. You have to make the decision to not give up. There's a level of delusion that is almost like this extreme hope and willingness to succeed. And then there's also, you also have to have some rationale, right? But if you have a plan and a desire to succeed, the most important thing is not giving up in those moments that scream at you to give up.
Every great company starts the same way, with a dream. Not a pitch deck, not a spreadsheet, but a vision. And behind every entrepreneur is the same starting point. A belief that something better is possible and the willingness to take on the risk trying to build it. Welcome to Dreaming Big. I'm Alexis Allen, and I'm a relationship manager on the Texera Lockroom Group here in the New York City office at UBS. I've spent the last decade working alongside founders across industries and stages. From ideas scribbled on napkins to companies scaling faster than anyone expected, I have seen what it really takes to turn vision into reality. And what has always drawn me is not just the outcome. It is the optimism, the grit, and the ability to hold a vision long before anyone else believes in it. On Dreaming Big, I sit down with entrepreneurs to talk about where that dream started, the moments that shaped them, the pivots they did not plan, what they're building, who they're becoming, and their lives they're trying to live along the way. And so we go deep into identity, turning points, joy, and the season where that dream felt fragile but somehow survived. This isn't just a podcast about startups. It's about making something out of nothing, about protecting an idea long enough for it to become real, and about the courage to keep going day after day. And so whether you're building your first company, scaling your fifth, investing in a founder, or simply drawn to people who see the future before it exists, this is for you. If you'd like to connect or share your story, you can reach me at alexis.allen@ubs.com. Now, this is Dreaming Big, and so let's dive in.
Today's guest is someone who beautifully embodies what it means to hold a vision long before anybody else sees it. I am sitting down with Joan Nguyen, the powerhouse co-founder and CEO of Boomo. Joan is the ultimate definition of a serial builder. She is a two-time successful founder who launched her first venture, Mary Education, scaled it to an Inc. 5000 company, and is now rewriting the playbook for modern parenthood. We are timing this episode with an incredibly exciting milestone. This past Mother's Day, Boomo officially launched Benny, an AI-powered family assistant designed to handle complex tasks like scheduling appointments, making reservations, and booking childcare and summer camps. It's to reduce the overwhelming mental load for busy parents. And in this episode, Joan pulls back the curtain on her journey as a child of Vietnamese refugees, what it really feels like to survive hundreds of fundraising no's to secure $10 million in venture funding, and the messy reality of building a frontier tech company while raising two kids. This is an incredibly honest look at resilience and what happens when you refuse to give up. So I'm excited to get into this conversation.
Thank you so much for joining me today. I'm really excited to dig into your incredible background and what you built. I would love to start at the beginning and lay the foundation for your life and your career, and hear about growing up and what your parents taught you about work and education to start with.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that's a very critical part of my journey is my upbringing and my childhood, especially the fact that my parents are Vietnamese refugees. So my dad finished seventh grade, my mom finished 12th grade. And even at that, she finished 12th grade much older. So they had a very interesting upbringing in terms of their access to education. And so growing up, I think what is a common through line among all Vietnamese refugees and their kids is the fact that education is so important, and the fact that coming to the United States as Vietnamese refugees, we get access to this incredible education system and to not take it for granted. So I think for them, it was always this emphasis on education, the quintessential getting good grades, making sure that you're like reaching for the stars and doing whatever you can by dint of hard work to get there. You know, obviously, if you look at my academic track record, I listened a little bit. I didn't listen totally because I had kind of a roller coaster ride in terms of my educational career. But But at the very least, that's what they taught me and that's what they tried to instill in me.
Really important foundation, because for you, you have approached everything with such discipline and rigor. And so going back to the start of your professional career, I want to hear about, you know, at 20 years old, you took a portion of your savings and started your own company. And we had quickly talked about the fact that prior to doing this, was working at a Starbucks. So you didn't necessarily have this corporate structure to bring to developing your own company. So tell me about that experience and what that taught you.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's some beauty in being naive to things, right? So I didn't have parents who taught me about entrepreneurship and starting a business. And so here I was working as a barista and at Starbucks. And what I learned from that was really efficiencies, right? Making many frappuccinos at the same time. I learned about customer service and how important that was. I learned about systems and structures and workflows that optimize operations, even if it was making coffee drinks for people. So those are the things that I learned that I transplanted into starting my first company, Mary Education. And so at that point, it was a blank slate. That's all I knew. I didn't know anything else. And so I think that gave me this sort of willpower and openness, right? To just will my way to make things happen, because I didn't study case studies of businesses that failed. I didn't study common best practices of businesses. I just kind of went with my gut and focused on customers. And I think that till this day has always proven to be a strength of mine is being customer obsessed and customer focused, which is something that I learned very early on as a barista for Starbucks.
Maybe I should take a step back and ask you, you know, in your words, what was Mary Education's mission and vision, and how would you have described that company?
Yeah, I mean, it was very much a tailored one-on-one approach to education, you know, working with K through 12, but mainly middle school and high school kids navigate that journey. So we did everything from test preparation to grade rehabilitation to college admissions consulting. But that's what we did, was just helping kids navigate. And seeing my kids now, as my daughter turns 10 this year and about to approach that age, it's a tough age. It's a tough age to work with. And so we were very much a cornerstone for many families during that very hard time when kids are transitioning.
I mean, you built this into an Inc. 5000 company. It's amazing that, you know, your first venture into the world of entrepreneurship was so tremendously successful. And during that time, you also became a mom. And so I would like to hear about that chapter and that transition, and also what it was like building and scaling that company, and at what point you thought about what the next chapter would look like.
I mean, it was an interesting journey building and scaling that company. A lot of learnings. I look back at how I did things, and I was so young, and most of it was in my 20s and didn't really know a lot about growing a company. And then I became a mom. And, you know, up until that point, I thought that this was going to be my evergreen company because I loved it so much. And because I was so passionate about supporting these kids and these families, because in them, I saw myself. I saw this like homeless high school kid whose parents wanted so much for them, who sacrificed so much for them. And they just had a hard time navigating their educational journey. And so, what's interesting is that when I became a mom, my compass changed. I saw another person in me that I wanted to help. Before, it was the high school me that I wanted to help. And I had that pathway through Mary Education. And then now I became this new mom trying to continue to run this company. And I felt like, wow, there's another subset of human beings that I want to help and support too. And so by serendipity at that point, my co-founder, Chriselle, had this idea for a co-working space with on-site childcare. And then I was hooked and I couldn't look back. And I just had one pathway forward at that point. And my new customer that I wanted to help and support was the busy parent and the stressed parent, which was actually me at that time.
And so when you started Boomo, it was originally a co-working space with on-site childcare. Share with me a little bit more about that vision, and especially what the early days were like, and whether you immediately sought to fundraise or whether it was growing and scaling a little bit more on the bootstrap side.
Yeah, so it was so capital intensive. I hardly talk about this, but the idea originally was to actually build a community first. And so we launched this thing called the Boomo Digest, which was a weekly newsletter. And so the idea was build a community and then raise some capital, which we did. We built a community, we raised capital, and then we got Westfield to agree to allow us to open the space at one of their most premier outdoor shopping centers, Century City. And so we were basically running things pretty swimmingly. And then we were supposed to launch March of 2020. And that's when the pandemic happened. And so that had forced us very abruptly to either course correct or die.
Yeah, that is a challenging pivot. And so I know that you've pivoted a number of times. It's really just grown and built upon what you had built as a foundation, which started as a community. Tell me about what Boomo looks like today and, you know, why you're excited about what this next chapter, especially in the world of AI, looks like.
Yeah, it's very exciting. I mean, we've changed a lot. So we're definitely the opposite of brick and mortar. We're no longer a brick and mortar space. We've evolved to first a tech-enabled marketplace. And then from there, with the advent of AI and technical architecture changing so rapidly, we thought about how can we change the user experience for the parents to be a lot more sophisticated, to be faster, to be quicker, to be a lot more supportive, given the sort of agentic relationships that consumers have now with AI. So we are launching the first ever AI family assistant, and it is going to be able to do complex tasks like scheduling appointments, making reservations, scheduling cams, childcare, booking tours. And it really, in theory, can span the entire life cycle of a child, right? Because every parent needs an assistant, right? It's just not accessible. And we know that it's not easy or cheap to find an assistant, but with where AI is now, that's possible. So really excited about that. I'm user number one, and my AI family assistants help me plan summer camps for the kids, restaurant reservations, because even though this isn't part of parenting, it's a load on your brain. And so if it can lift a load on your brain, then I think that's incredible. So we're really excited about how parents as consumers are able to interact with AI through Boomo's assistant.
So much of it has been enabled because you've built such a tremendous amount of trust with your consumers and your customers. Share with me about how you've gone about that, because especially when it comes to parents, the most important thing in their lives is their children. And so How do you build that level of trust, especially when you're thinking about vetting anything from childcare to helping them plan trips and camps and anything that's related to their children?
I think it comes down fundamentally to what I believe is, as the founder, I have to be the super user. And I have to also be the person who feels, touches, and is entrenched in everything. So going back even to every single vestige of anything that I've created, from Mary Education, you know, I wrote the textbooks, I taught the first classes, I worked with the first students, and going into Boomo, the co-working space with on-site childcare, I took all the early education classes to certify myself as a lead infant teacher. I visited all the preschools and daycares after that when we started a marketplace and pitched them myself and learned about them and learned about how they operate. Same thing with Boomo and this AI assistant that we're creating, Benny, and the name is Benny, is I am user number one. Coordinate things with Benny. I trust Benny to figure things out. And you know, of course, there's like this testing phase too, where Benny can be better. And so for me, it's about creating something that I can really put my name behind for my friends, for my family, for my sister who has kids, because I know how precious your family is. I know how precious having children is. And so I think it's that obsession that I continuously have that builds trust, because a lot of parents will say, well, Joan, if you've gone through it, then we trust it, right? And I don't take that lightly. I don't take that lightly at all. I take that very seriously. And so I continue to navigate the rest of my journey in entrepreneurship in the same manner, is knowing that parents deeply trust the things that I put out there and that I have to be in the trenches understanding the product I'm putting out there too.
It's something that I appreciate so much about your approach and your founder story, which really is the fact that you have rolled up your sleeves, you are in the trenches, you have such a high standard of excellence for yourself, but also for the outcomes of your company. And so I would love to pull back the curtain a little bit and talk about the company from a company management perspective and a little bit more about your fundraise and as you think about yourself as a builder. Last year, you raised $10 million, which is a pretty tremendous amount of venture funding. And so given that this is not your first rodeo, I would love to hear about what it was like to close this round and a bit more about what that fundraising process was like.
Absolutely. I mean, it was very, very hard. I can't imagine many companies coming on and saying that it's easy to fundraise. I think even for the ones that look the most successful, right, where you see on, you know, traded VC, like raise like 10 million, 20 million, 30 million, 40 million. For most companies, it's very hard. We've had lots of no's. I've had lots of times where I've flown out for a meeting to have a partner meeting and got a no. And this last cycle to get to the 10 million, it was hundreds of no's still. Right. And it was not easy. You know, we got a term sheet, basically, and then it got pulled from us. We got a term sheet and then something changed. And then we had to like figure something else out. And so that whole cycle was a long, long cycle and was very, very hard. And I think what is very important for me to say is that process, which took months, almost a year, there were many points in those months that any rational human being should have just said, I give up. And the term sheet got pulled, I give up. We're going to run out of money in 2 months, I give up. I'm meeting with this investor and they said no, and there's nobody else in my pipeline, I give up. But I suspect most founders who've gotten to a point of, you know, this stage or beyond Series A, B, C, and so forth, there are many points where you can choose to give up. And those points will come at you in your face many, many times. But you have to make the decision to not give up and stand on. There's a level of delusion that is almost like this, like extreme hope and willingness to succeed. And then there's also, you also have to have some rationale, right? I knew that if I would raise this money, I'm going to build a $1 billion company or more that's going to revolutionize parents and childcare. But if you have a plan and a desire to succeed, the most important thing is not giving up in those moments that scream at you to give up.
Really appreciate your transparency, but also your mentality and take on that, because I think it's not uncommon for founders to talk about how challenging fundraising is, but the persistent, almost irrational belief that you are going to be the one to get the right yeses, to get the right amount of yeses and to continue to go is super inspiring. And you have such a future-looking perspective on how you hope to change the world for the better. When you think about Boomo in 5 years, what gets you excited for what the next 5 years looks like?
I mean, I'm excited because I feel like Benny, our AI assistant, is going to help reduce the mental load significantly for busy working parents. I feel like it's going to support in closing the gender gap in terms of how the parenting load is shared. I feel like it's going to help beyond just economically, right? It's very easy to access, very affordable to get this AI assistant who's going to help you do so many tasks and free up so much time. Beyond the sort of financial part of an economic, you know, sort of rationale behind Benny and why any parent should want Benny, it's also emotional, right? It's, you know, parenting is hard, especially as a working, busy parent, especially as a parent who's trying to build a company. It's so hard. And I'm excited to make it easier because parenting and family care is not, it's not this glamorous sector that people want to invest in. It's not a glamorous sector that any founder wants to wake up and say, like, I want to go into childcare or family care. But I'm excited that I have the great fortune of being that person that can wake up every day and say, this is what I want to do. And this is an industry that I want to change. And I know in 5 years, that will happen.
John, I want to underline something. The way that you just answer that question, that is different than how most people answer it, which is a lot of people would say, I want it to be global. I want it to be used by thousands of customers. You really went to the root of the issue and also the second order consequences that come from a successful Boomo and any being a success, which is thinking more broadly, you know, gender pay gap, thinking about how it will change families and, you know, mental loads for parents. And so I really appreciate that response. And I fully believe that it will have that type of impact. You know, you're a mom of two and your kids are watching you build this. What do you want them to learn from seeing you do this?
I want them to learn a lot of things. I think one is I want them to learn and see that hard things can be achieved. During my fundraise, actually, my kids knew when an investor would say no to me. I would tell them. They said no to me. And that would fly back from San Francisco. And they'd be like, Mommy, did they say yes? Did they say yes? I'm like, no, they said no. Or if they did say yes, they would cheer. So I tried to explain to them all the parts of BUMO because I want them to know that it's hard. But I also want them to look back. And I think the most important thing, because I do work so much. And so whatever it may seem like on my Instagram or whatever it is, I work a lot. I try to be there for my kids, but I work an insane amount. And it takes an insane amount of work to do what we're destined to do. But I want them to know that at the end of the day, they look back when they're 18, 25, 35, and they look back and they're proud of me and they're proud of what I've built, and that they could say that they watched their mom do this. You know, that to me is the most important thing.
I love that you brought them along in the journey and not just, you know, the successes and sugarcoating it, but those are fundamental lessons that they'll bring through for the rest of their life. If they ever face, which they most likely will, you know, rejection, they'll have instances to pull back from their childhood of, that doesn't mean that it's the end. That doesn't mean that it's the worst thing that can happen. It actually is just building towards potentially something greater.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I want to quickly end with some rapid fire questions that I ask all my guests, starting with, what is the best business advice you've ever received?
I think the best business advice I've ever received is asking for help. I know that sounds really simple, but oftentimes we don't ask for help. And especially women, I think it's important for us to always ask for help and be unashamed to do so.
For you, what does living a rich life mean to you?
Freedom of time and place. Yeah. So I want to be free to do what I want to do, when I want to do it, and who I want to do it with. If that means working, that's rich to me. If that means just sitting around in my pajamas, that's rich to me too. And or playing with my kids, that's rich to me also.
I love that you technically are building a more rich life, because hopefully you will free up some of your own time with Ben.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
What is the biggest money mistake you've made, either from your own life or building BUMO or Mary Education? You have so many different opportunities to draw from.
Oh my gosh, there are so many. I think from BUMO, because I didn't have marketing experience, I overpaid for marketing executives. And that was a huge burn on capital. And so that was something. And I think I had imposter syndrome. So I thought that I couldn't lead marketing. But then I realized now, after many years, that I understand the customer, I understand the brand, I understand the voice, and I can do marketing and find the people who to execute on my behalf, because I don't have time to do everything from A to Z. Saying that was one big mistake I did in terms of money. I think another thing too is not also investing enough. I feel like there are so many opportunities to invest in amazing seed companies. I was fortunate to invest in a few early on, and those have been really fruitful, which has been really nice to be able to get your own access to other means of income. So I encourage more people, especially women. There's this whole term, angel curious moms, to look into investing in things through SPVs, where you can write smaller checks and just be a part of something bigger. Yeah. So those are, I think, the big ones. The third one, an addendum to that too, is sometimes also it's better to pay somebody more who can do more and be more reliable. So I'm not saying that you just don't pay people like big salaries. That's not the case. But there are people that will just free up your time. You don't have to micromanage or babysit them. So that was a mistake too. Is like, I was like, oh, I can hire five people and their salaries are much lower. I could just hire two people with higher salaries who had more agency. That would have freed up my mind share. So that those are also complimentary.
Those are three fantastic examples and answers. So thank you for that. Lastly, what are you currently dreaming about?
Honestly, how to scale as fast as I can.
Awesome. I'm so grateful for your time and your answers. Really, you have an extraordinary career, and so you've created so much that will shape so many individuals' lives. So thank you for building what you have, and thank you for being so honest and transparent in this conversation. I really appreciate it, and I know our listeners will as well.
What an incredible conversation. I am so grateful to Joan for her honesty and transparency. It is rare to hear a two-time founder talk so openly about the moments that scream at you to give up and the beautiful hint of delusion that it takes to keep going anyways. Joan's story is a testament to what happens when you build with a standard of excellence and an obsession with solving real consumer problems. A massive congratulations again to the entire Boomo team on the Mother's Day launch of Benny. If you're a parent trying to lift that mental load off your brain, go check out what they're building at Boomo.com. And if you love this episode, please take a moment to subscribe, rate, and share it with a friend who is out there dreaming big and building the future. You can always reach out to connect or share your own founder story with me, alexis.allen@ubs.com. Thank you for tuning in to Dreaming Big. I'm Alexis Allen, and I'll see you next time.
This podcast is presented for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as investment advice or the basis for making any investment decisions. It does not constitute an offer to sell or a solicitation of an offer to buy any specific product or service. UBS does not provide legal or tax advice, and we would recommend listeners to obtain appropriate independent professional advice. Some of the views and opinions expressed may not be those of UBS Group AG or its affiliates. UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. These services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreements and disclosures that we provide about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary. UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS Group AG and is a member of FINRA and SIPC.